BGB, good stuffs. Hello, listeners.
Hello, welcome to another exciting episode of BGB Good Stuff.
That's right. This is our BGB Foodstuffs.
Foodstuffs?
Good Stuffs. I'm Jeffrey Craig.
And I'm Matthew Craig.
We're brothers in real life.
And board game designers in real life. Don't forget that part.
And what we like to do the first day of every month is release an episode where we just talk about the games that we've been playing. You know, we spend every week talking about one particular game for the most part, and we do play a lot more games, and we like to share all that with our listeners.
Of course.
Give some suggestions. Sometimes we play some newer games, sometimes we play some older games. So this is just our platform where we can talk about whatever we want.
In a much less structured environment.
Indeed. And sometimes we talk about things that aren't video games, or that are video games that aren't board games. And so let's get into it. So yeah. we played a lot of games, since the last Good Stuffs.
Yeah. We actually went on a trip recently and we brought a bunch of our games and got to play some new ones with new family members that we haven't played games with.
Mm-hmm. It's been a lot of fun. So let's just go through a couple of the games we've been playing, Matthew.
Yeah.
What's the first one we want to talk about?
So I got this one a couple weeks ago, and we've played through it a couple times already. This is, of course, Monopoly Legacy.
Right. Now, this one I was skeptical about because, yeah. You know, we've ragged on Monopoly enough in this podcast.
Right.
But I'm actually very surprised with what has been done here in Monopoly Legacy.
Yeah, you know, every time I finish the game, I just come to the next playthrough thinking I can't wait to see what story unfolds in Monopoly Legacy.
I mean, it's interesting because in Monopoly, it's just like one player gets really far ahead and it feels really bad for all the other players. But in Monopoly Legacy, you know, and on subsequent playthroughs, the player that did really well in the previous game has to now adapt to the changing business environment. And usually, for the most part, they're never able to advance in like technology or anything. Like you have to make a website the second playthrough, and the person who won the first playthrough is like totally against it for some reason.
Right.
It's really fun.
You adopt a CEO at the first session, and as you go, the CEO determines what happens for you.
Mm-hmm.
So you might start with a CEO who's really rich because of one thing, but some event might happen, like a law might pass that completely changes, and your CEO just doesn't want to have anything to do with it.
Right, and meanwhile, the players that haven't done so well in previous playthroughs now have these young upstart CEOs that are
exactly.
They're hip to the jive, as the game puts it.
Yes.
So the Monopoly Legacy, it comes in a surprisingly small box for a legacy game, which I thought was interesting. It uses the Monopoly credit card dollar
electronic
banking system that's been used in those fancy Monopolies that don't use cash, paper money.
Yeah. Honestly, I was unsure about it at first because flavor-wise, if you're starting in like the 1800s or 1900s, it doesn't make much sense. But I think based on the amount of money we've already ended up with, it is very useful.
Mm-hmm.
Very good quality of life.
We also played a game called The Worst Game Ever Made.
Yeah.
And in this game, it's you basically, there's a board with spaces that go around it in like a square. And some of the spaces are properties, and some of them are spaces where you can draw cards that do special actions. And when you land on a property, if nobody owns it, you can buy it for a certain amount of money. And if somebody else owns it, when you land on it, then you have to pay them a little bit of money. And then after you've acquired a certain number of properties in one area of the board, you can then start developing them. And you place like structures on them. And the game comes with these nice like plastic pieces, these plastic mold pieces that you use to represent the structures that you place on the territories that you acquire. And those make other players pay more money when they land there.
Right.
So it's a really interesting back and forth of like, you know, buying territories, and then there's the whole drama of like, it's scary. I might accidentally land on the really expensive place. I hope I don't.
Yeah, it leads to some very good stories, you know, very, what's it called? Gameplay that stems from the rules unexpectedly.
Mm-hmm.
Sort of just like, you know, you might suddenly land on somebody's space that has a bajillion developments on it. And nobody would have expected that to happen, but that just kind of makes it more exciting, you know? Mm-hmm.
And I really like the conflict resolution mechanics in this game, where if you land somewhere and you don't have enough money, you know, you can barter with the person who owns the property. You can sell off your own property for money so that you can cover certain costs and then buy it back later once you've acquired more money from other players.
And if you don't buy the property, then everybody else can auction for it, which ends up being a good way that players who might not have as much money might be able to, you know, be able to get something in an auction for cheap. Or, you know, we mentioned the bartering. It helps that players who aren't as good at the strategy can use a social aspect to, you know, be able to get a slight advantage or get ahead in the game or get off their feet.
Mm-hmm. And I know you personally really love the social aspects in board games. And also, you know, if you're getting unlucky, like nobody's landing on your spaces, you still get a free $200 just by making it one lap around the board, which is nice. Yeah, so that's really good. Those are probably our top two games that we played this month. What are some other games we've been playing?
So let's see. I don't think we've talked about Flux before. Flux is a very expansive party game series.
Right, it's a game where it starts out very basic and then it tacks on rules. The rules at the start are draw one, play one, and then as you play you acquire cards called keepers, and then eventually you play cards called goals, which determine if you win or not depending on what keepers you have in front of you.
Right. And the rules constantly change.
Yeah,
and
so it starts draw one, play one, but then it could be more than that.
Right, and you see this a lot with great, like, comedy series. Like, there's, you know, Monty Python Flux, there's Rick and Morty Flux.
It's a very bare-bones system that they can easily reskin. It's just the keepers are the things that you collect, so you just pick a couple iconic things from whatever you're skinning it as. And then the goals are just how those things combine. And you can just use major story points for that.
Right. And so the version we played most recently is Citizen Kane Flux.
Oh, man.
The greatest movie of all time gets the greatest party card game of all time.
Yeah. And they
it's
really,
a match made in heaven.
They really did a great job, you know. I mean, when I started playing that, I'm like, okay, what kind of keepers can they really pull from Citizen Kane? But then I drew my opening hand and I had Rosebud right there.
Right.
You know, the sled from the end of the movie, remember?
Yeah.
Where the whole movie, you're like, what is that? And then at the end, you're like, it's the sled. I had the sled in my hand.
I thought it was cool that one of the goals was just the mystery plot of the movie, where you have to have Rosebud and then the other characters of the movie need to be in play.
Mm-hmm. Citizen Kane and the others.
Yeah.
The reporter that doesn't, you don't see him, you just see the movie from his perspective.
And there's the snow globe goal, mm-hmm. where you have to have Rosebud and the snow and the childhood house.
Right, right. I remember you had to get the table that gets longer and longer in that one sequence, plus his wife that he doesn't love. For that one goal.
Xanadu,
yeah. That was the other card, the other keeper you needed for the goal, which was just old Citizen Kane.
Yeah.
That was a really, honestly, some of the adaptions that Flux uses, they don't really make sense. Like, okay, why would you really want a regular show Flux? Like, you're just selling to kids that watch regular show. It doesn't really add anything to the Flux to the Flux system, but then you play Citizen Kane Flux and you're like, this is total sense. These are keepers.
Yeah.
And these are goals, like, from the movie. It's amazing.
It's seriously,
it's a match made in heaven.
Yeah.
Kind of like Citizen Kane and his wife that he doesn't love. I really had a lot of fun. Now, I you probably didn't have as much fun playing this because you like the more serious games and not really the party games, but I had a lot of fun playing Cards for Humanity.
It was pretty interesting, I will give it that.
You know, it's an interesting take on the you know, this common party game system where you have a deck of one kind of card and a deck of another kind of card, and a judge draws one of the one kind of card, and then everybody else plays the other kind of card, and then the judge picks which one makes the most sense.
Yeah, the call and response sort of party game structure.
Yeah, and so in this one, you know, the one deck that the judge draws from is the front of, like, a Hallmark greeting card, and then everybody else has to place the inside card in the Hallmark greeting card to try and make the most wholesome greeting card combination. That was a fun game, Cards for Humanity.
Yeah, I teared up a little bit. I will admit, some of these are just too beautiful.
But honestly, I mean, I really loved it at first. It was really great. But then, like, we played it a lot. And then some of the wholesomeness kind of gets old a while. It's like, okay, I get it. Yeah, you love your mom. Like, whatever. Like, yeah. I get it. I saw that same combination last time. And some of them are just, like ooey-gooey humor, you know? Like, it's just too lovey-dovey, you know? Yeah. Like, it doesn't even make sense. It's just, like hugging puppies or whatever. Like, okay, where's the substance? Where's the actual, like, joke in there? Or not joke, but, like, the actual, like, wholesome message in there.
Yeah, and there's a lot that reference stuff on the internet, like, about marking you as being in a relationship on Facebook. And I don't think my grandma really understood that.
Yeah, yeah. And I remember there was one time where I had to explain to my mom that what Kia meant.
Yeah.
K-Y-A-A, because she never heard of it. And I was like, well, it's kind of this, like, Japanese thing that... And it was just... It was too embarrassing to explain to my mom. What else? What have you been playing? I know you played a couple games with your friends.
Yeah, so me and my friends, we love our strategy games, obviously. And I was really excited. So for those who don't know, Uwe Rosenberg, great game designer. We talked about one of his games, Agricola.
Yeah, Agricola.
Well, he's very well known for making these worker placement games, and he's made an autobiographical worker placement game. Uwe Rosenberg placement game.
Yeah, I saw this, the Uwe Rosenberg placement game. This game looks really cool.
It is a game in which you play as Uwe Rosenberg, sending out clones of himself to different board game publishing studios to get contracts and deals to design board games. And then you need to, you know, get the materials for your prototype and get the playtesters together and gather up interest. And then you want to make board games, but the board games you make take up so much shelf space, which is like this square grid.
Mm-hmm.
And so you want to make these good board games. And, you know, like, there's the dream project where each player has, like, their dream game they want to make. But if you don't make it by the end of the game, you lose points. And so that's sort of like a goal you might want to focus on.
Yeah, I looked at the rules online, and I haven't played it yet. But it looks like to be one of Uwe Rosenberg's actually most simple games.
Yeah.
From the way it looks. We're on vacation right now. You fell asleep early last night, but me and a couple cousins stayed up pretty late. We played a spooky game.
Mm-hmm.
We played Betrayal at Grandma's House on the Hill Through the Woods Over the River.
Oh yeah, BATGHOTHTHTWOTR.
Yeah. If you want to call it that for short, but I like to call it by its full name because I respect the game. And that's just
back
a really
goth to Twitter.
That's just a really fun game where you and a bunch of family members go to your grandma's house through the river and through the woods and over the river and stay there for the night. But then in the middle of the night, it's revealed that one of you is secretly hungry for a snack.
Yeah.
And you have to go and you have to go to the fridge and get the snacks from your grandma's fridge, and she didn't tell you could have
it's
them.
It's not always from your fridge. Sometimes the campaign that you end up doing might have you, like, go to the cookie jar.
That's true, yeah. And I mean, they have this whole booklet of, like, snacks that your character wants to eat when you turn out to be the betrayer. And it is a betrayal because those snacks were meant for everyone, and you're eating them all. And
yeah,
that's really rude.
That's really not what you should do at your grandma's
house. And, you know,
especially if the house is on a hill through the woods and over the river.
Exactly, and I ended up being the betrayer in both games that we played.
Man, that's gotta suck.
Yeah, everyone was looking at me. I mean, like, they were looking at me crossways, you know, both times. And I kept, you know, we kept finding all these omens, you know, like doilies and tchotchkes. And no one was sharing them with me in the second game because I was the betrayer in the first game.
Yeah.
And they just didn't trust me, even though it was a completely different game, you know. You know, I'd like to say that to the listeners. If you ever play multiple instances of Betrayal at Grandma's House on the Hill Through the Woods Over the River, you know, last game shouldn't have any bearing on the next game. That's just, like, messed up.
If your playgroup does that at Bat Goth to Twitter, then you might want to play something else.
Speaking of this game, I'm excited for an expansion that's coming out this year. This is a little board game news. We like to say board game news on these good stuff episodes.
Yeah.
There's going to be a Betrayal at Bear in the Big Blue House on the Hill. Which is obviously, it's themed after a popular kids show.
TV show tie-in.
Where, you know, it was mostly puppets on that show. And I hear that in this game, everyone starts the game as puppets, but then it's revealed that one person was really a human being in disguise.
You know, it's weird when you think about the flavor that you could start as the moon, which is a puppet in the show.
That's true.
And then be a human, but you're still, like, in the sky, you know, in front of bears, like, out balcony.
I'm really interested to see how they handle that. It's sort of like an asymmetrical betrayal game now. Because one player could definitely just be a celestial body hovering over the entire mansion. Do you remember, we played this earlier today, actually. Do you remember Take No No?
Oh, yeah.
Take No No is this really fun. It's like it's a really light game. Honestly, we're kind of considering it for if we ever go back to the Gateway Game series. I think this is a contender for one of the spots. Maybe even the Catan spot. Because it is a tile. It does have, like, hexagonal tile placements. You place hexagonal tiles and you're expanding a garden that a panda lives in. And you're feeding it bamboo. And then you go to sleep for the night, and when you wake up, the panda may have left a duty on one of the spaces. And that's why it's called Take No No, because you when that happens, you gotta tell a panda, no, no, Take, no, no.
No, no, Take, you went too far this time.
Yeah, he went too far with the poo. It's a really fun game, fun for the whole family. Yeah. It's like that one game that's an actual game where you put poo on a mat.
This is also an actual game.
It's like
game,
Twister.
Right?
It's like Twister, but you blindfold yourself and walk across a mat, and there's poo on it.
Yeah,
it's like that, but it's more of a board game.
Hobbyist.
It's a table game. Yeah, there's a little more strategy to it because you know, considering what kind of bamboo you feed the panda and where he is when you go to sleep for the night, there's a greater chance that he poos in an enemy's part of the garden and not one of your parts of the garden. And there's also this cool mechanic where, depending on what kind of bamboo you feed him, the poo may actually serve as fertilizer to fertilize more bamboo.
It's a bit of a risk-reward situation.
Yeah, you know? Because you don't want to be caught with the bamboo at the end of the game. I mean, with the poo at the end of the game. But, you know, you can utilize poo at different parts of the game to increase your bamboo production, which then lets you feed him more bamboo, which you might need to, you know, like, if you're falling behind, you can shove a lot of bamboo in his mouth so that night he leaves an extra big poo in an enemy space.
Or if you can, like, get a really big burst early game, you can try to fertilize and use the bamboo you get from that fertilization as, like, an engine for the rest of the game. It's pretty fun.
Let's see. A while ago, you know, we did our Ticket to Ride episode. And we just played a new Ticket to Ride expansion.
Oh yeah, they just came out with this one. Yeah. I was surprised.
Yeah, I mean, this one, it feels like it came out of nowhere, because normally, I mean, they do announcements for this stuff, and they normally like to put their game in at least a real country. And I think occasionally they've gone to, like, a fantasy place, but it's usually been a very popular fantasy place.
Yeah.
But this is, like, one of the more obscure fantasy places, which is kind of cool.
This is, of course, Ticket to Ride, the Island of Sodor.
And for those not familiar, Sodor is the island that Thomas the Tank Engine takes place on.
Exactly.
Right. So everyone in the game is a Sir Topham Hatt. And all the
train line colors are your favorite Thomas the Tank Engine characters, like Henry and Gordon
and Thomas.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah.
And all the little plastic pieces have little faces on them, which are really creepy.
I think it's endearing.
I personally am deeply disturbed by Thomas the Tank Engine.
Honestly, I only wanted to get this to use the plastic pieces as minis during a D&D campaign.
Could you imagine, like you're in a cave and a wall bursts and a million tiny trains with faces come pouring out?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like that one surrealist painting with the train coming out of the wall.
And I'm going to use the Sir Topham Hatt figures in my own Starfinder campaign.
Oh, yeah.
Because, you know, who doesn't need clones of the same mayor? That could be cool.
Yeah.
A mayor with many clones.
Yeah, it's like in a sci-fi Officer setting. Jenny, Nurse Joy type of thing.
Right. So, you know, you pick your Topham Hatt, in this game, you stretch train lines across the island of Sodor, And you're not really trying to make, like, the longest train lines, but you're trying to make train lines that meet up with other train lines. Right. Because you want your Thomas the Train engines to meet up with other right. people's
Thomas the Train engines. You're trying Thomas to make the happiest train lines.
Exactly. And the happiest train lines are the ones that come Have into friends. Contact with their friends. Exactly, yeah. with their friends. Which is a really kind of cool inversion of the typical ticket to ride. It's almost cooperative.
Yeah.
Because, you know, it's like at the end of the game, it's not the person with the most friendship that wins. It's you win to a certain extent based on the average friendship of the entire table. Mm-hmm. So it's cooperative. And there's like slight bonuses to being the one with the highest friendship, but you know, it's really for the good of the group.
Yeah.
It's a really wholesome game, and it comes with one of those wooden train tracks, just one of them. The one that has, like, the notches that you can connect to all the other wooden train tracks. So it's good if you're trying to, like, finish a collection of those.
Yeah.
I think it's the only place you can get the exclusive Cube End train track.
Mm-hmm.
What else have we been playing?
Let's see. There is... Obviously, I'm a big fan of deck building games. We did a whole episode on the mechanics.
Mm-hmm.
And there's actually a pretty recent one that came out from Cryptozoic, which is the Washington, D.C. deck building game.
Right. And it's funny, it's mostly villains in the deck.
Yeah.
But it's, you know.
I don't actually think there's any heroes. I think they just wanted to stay away from making enemies from, like, you know, people. They didn't want to offend anybody, so they just made everybody a villain.
Right. And although in a Game Trade magazine, they did have a Bernie Sanders hero card exclusive, but I wasn't able to get it in time. That was a little bit ago.
Right.
And it's gone out of print, and the ones that, you know, if you want to get it, you got to spend a lot of money and do a lot of digging online.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's too much for just a board game or a DC deck building game spinoff.
Yeah. And I do like, though, there are a lot of locations, you know, famous monuments from around the area.
Yeah, all 50 states, they have their houses, whatever,
I do like,
capitals.
I do like their checks and balances mechanic, which is if the trade row gets too filled up with one branch of the government, then you have to replace any new ones that come in with a different one until you have an even amount in the trade row.
Mm-hmm.
So as such, the trade row does have 6 cards instead of the normal 5.
And I get that that doesn't really flavorfully always match up with what's really happening.
Yeah.
But it's necessary for gameplay.
It does help in the deck builder trade row style where, you know, you might get too many of one type of card.
Right, that's
this
true.
Way, you're guaranteed, and it kind of makes sense.
It kind of balances out the different strategies.
Mm-hmm.
You know, one strategy is to have, like, a very weak government that doesn't meddle in business a lot and doesn't provide a lot of social,
right.
you know, and things. But then there's also the strategy where you try to make a government that is very much involved in businesses, and it tries to break apart businesses that are too strong and put a lot of regulation and also provide a lot of social, like, free social things like healthcare.
Right. And, like, there's a lot of executive cards that deal with the opposing players and their governments.
Mm-hmm.
You know, stuff like that. There's a lot of judiciary that, you know, sort of changes how you interact with your own stuff. It's pretty interesting.
Yeah. I think it's the most interesting Cryptozoic deck builder to come out since the Naruto Cryptozoic deck builder game. And that again was the Washington DC deck builder.
Yeah.
Highly recommend that. Look for that. I like this one we played. A couple weeks ago in this month where we kind of went to some like throwback games.
Mm-hmm.
We're trying to like play some like old games from our childhood, some like, you know, the games that are made like entirely out of plastic and they have like these weird springy movable parts that always break and stuff like that. So one of the games we played was It's In My Eyes. It's basically just a tiny plastic catapult and you just put whatever you want on it and you point it at your face and then you try not to get it in your eyes when it goes off. That was a really fun game.
Yeah.
I got a pencil in my eyes. And I got, some note cards in my eyes. Did you get anything in your eyes? I don't remember.
There was an ice cube, which I think at the time was partially melted, so it's more like an ice ball.
Oh, okay.
And there's still some water left in.
And that got in your eyes?
Yeah, and then I think we put baking soda in.
Uh-huh.
And, yeah, that got in my eyes.
Yeah, that was, the baking soda was interesting.
Yeah.
And then we did vinegar right after, but luckily it dodged you and instead went into our mom's eyes.
You know, it's really interesting. I think the game came with, like, I don't even know, it came with, like, a sponge or something that you put in there.
Yeah.
But we lost it a long time ago.
Yeah, so we just kind of douse it in liquids.
Yeah.
It also came with these like, glass vials, and we're too afraid to open them.
Yeah.
We
can't find any documentation on the internet about them. And the rule book doesn't even, like, say that much of anything. I think we actually lost a page or two from it.
Yeah, and I think one of the glass vials actually broke. And I don't know exactly what happened, because when we got the box, there was, like, that melted hole in the bottom.
Oh, yeah.
But the other vials are intact. And so if you guys have any information on the vials, you can leave us a comment. Send us a message, you know, on, like, Twitter or something. You know, we'd like to know before we play this game again. Honestly, I'm interested to see what kind of extra gameplay they might bring to it.
Yeah.
You know, do they, can they, maybe if they permanently damage your eyes, maybe they numb your eyes so that everything else you get in your eyes doesn't hurt so much.
Yeah.
Which could be interesting, because then you could get a lot more things in your eyes than your opponents. What was that other game we played that was kind of like a throwback? It was, it was Don't Wake Azathoth.
Oh, yeah.
it was, you know, this really kind of cutesy game where there's, like, this bed, and there's, like, a sheet that's, like, covering this thing.
Yeah,
and you walk around it. It's like
an immeasurable blob concept containing everything.
Yeah, and you walk around it because the whole world exists as a dream in Azathoth's sleep, and so if you were to wake him up, you know, the world would end.
The whole universe, everything known to man would end.
Yeah, because it's all just a dream of this eldritch being. So it's really fun. You know, you creep around the board, you're trying to get a snack from the fridge or something, which is kind of like that other game.
I think we
ended up finding Betrayal at Grandma's House on the Hill Through the Woods Over the River because we played this game, and it kind of made us like, ooh, I wonder if there's any other games with, like, a snack stealing mechanic in them.
Yeah.
And and so we checked online, and we found what's the acronym?
Hold on, I have to make sure.
Bagoth the Twoter. Yeah, so, you know, you creep around, and then if you wake them up, the game implodes upon itself, but not before you see the grotesque visage of a formless,
immeasurable, unknowable being.
Yeah, a being so unknown. Speaking of unknown beings, I ended up playing this game called Fall of Cthulhu, which was really fun.
Mm-hmm.
It's got Cthulhu in it. And the way you play it is you try and make as many pieces of media about Cthulhu as you possibly can and saturate the market with, like, Cthulhu-related things to the point where Cthulhu isn't this, like, scary, featureless thing. It's just, like, this like, cartoon that you make fun of or whatever. And because he loses the fear that his name would normally hold, then he becomes powerless. And that's how you beat Cthulhu. It's fun. It's one of the only games where you actually beat Cthulhu.
Yeah.
Rather than just, like, avoid him.
Yeah.
Which is nice.
Yeah. So, let's see. I know I've talked a bit about a game that is a very intense strategy game, sort of similar to a video game. Well, so I finally got a chance to play StarCraft, the board game.
Right, they finally...
It's basically a board game version of StarCraft.
Blizzard finally gave up their IP to Fantasy Flight Games, and they made StarCraft the board game, finally.
It's basically the same thing. I mean, you set up, like, a little base, and you make units, and the units give you resources, and there's, like, a small map, and you want to, you know, squash out the competition.
Uh-huh.
You know... It's what you would expect.
You know, you micromanage your troops. You want to be spending your resources as soon as you get them to maximize. Yeah,
but you can only use so many troops at any given turn.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and so now, you know, we can no longer say stuff like, this is basically like a board game version of StarCraft because they made it.
Yeah.
And honestly, it's perfect. Like, it's literally the board game version of StarCraft. It's practically like playing the video game StarCraft, but it's, you know, entirely analog. It's all cardboard, wooden pieces, plastic pieces.
Yeah, I do like the, what is it, the observers, the Zerg floating things.
Mm-hmm.
They have this little, like, plastic see-through stand they sit on.
Oh, man, those things are so cool.
Yeah.
Those little plastic see-through stands where it makes something look like it's flying.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Yeah, this game is chock full of those things.
Yeah.
Yeah, I love it. This game, I mean, the quality of the pieces is really what sets this game apart from any other board game that's kind of like StarCraft. Because even though it's kind of like StarCraft, you know, it doesn't really look like StarCraft or feel like StarCraft. But this game, like, it's everything. It's it's like they exported the physical assets and just imported them into real life or something.
Oh, yeah, the pylons even have little holograms that go inside them.
So cool. Another kind of adaptation kind of game that I played recently was it was a D&D board game that's basically just D&D, but it's a little watered down. And I can't remember which board game it was because there's a couple of them. But yeah. I played one of them.
Nice.
It was very much similar to D&D.
Right.
Almost as similar to D&D as the StarCraft board game was to StarCraft. But it watered down a lot of stuff. Like, there was no DM and, like, there's no character creation.
Oh,
you just
kind
of get a character. And you don't really plan the dungeon. The dungeon's already pre-planned. But it still got all the same, like, stats as D&D and all the same, like, proper nouns and all the same, you know, general rule sets as D&D. It's just much more watered down.
Oh yeah, definitely.
But I didn't play D&D this month.
Yeah,
it's a little
gotta figure out when everybody's free.
I mean, we're board game bros too.
Yeah,
we gotta really stick to those board games.
We're not tabletop role playing game bros.
Right, exactly. Is there any other games we played?
Yeah, so you know, I think last board game bros good stuffs, so we talked about Pandemic Legacy. How I actually was really anxious to play that again,
mm-hmm.
because, like, I just felt like there was too much weight on my shoulders.
Right, and we didn't get a chance to play Pandemic
Legacy. But I'm really glad they have a version now that is Pandemic Inconsequential.
Right.
Where all your decisions you make in a game do not carry over to the next game. Meaning if you mess up and the world gets overthrown in riots, or if it gets swept up in a disease, then it's not the end of the world. I mean, you can just play it again and try again.
Right. It's like, I get that feeling too when we're playing Pandemic Legacy. Like, oh my God, like, we still have how many months left of this thing?
Yeah.
And this virus just keeps getting harder and harder to
already
quash.
Five cities
and
are wiped out.
Yeah, we've lost Shanghai. You know, it's terrible. But you know, this game is really great, and you just play it in between games of Pandemic Legacy, honestly.
Yeah.
You just like, okay, well, let's just, while we're trying it, we're kind of like Scooby-Doo gang, you know, just trying to figure out a plan, and sometimes it doesn't go right.
Yeah.
Sometimes everyone in the world succumbs to four different viruses.
It's but, you know, you just try it again, see how long you can do it next time.
Yeah, it's not so bad. I really enjoyed Pandemic Inconsequential. We also, you know, we're talking about a lot of games that we've played before. We're talking about some of the newer versions we played. There's a new Forbidden, you know, we talked about last good stuff, that there's Forbidden Skies that's mm-hmm. coming out, and Under the Radar was Forbidden Peninsula.
Right. It's not an island.
It's
it is a
peninsula. Right.
It's interesting because you still have to get the four statues, but you don't have to worry about it sinking or anything because it's very well connected to the rest of land.
Yeah.
You know, and very structurally stable.
And they put these, like, mechanics in where some parts of the land are higher ground than others, so they'll sink later in the game.
Right.
Especially the part right next to where it connects to the rest of the landmass.
Right, and you can build levees. And there's, like, a card that lets you call the Army Corps of Engineers.
Yeah, from the country that you're connected to.
Yeah.
And also, there's no helicopter pilot.
Yeah, you just
class.
Have to get to the other side.
Yeah, exactly. Once you get the stuff,
you just walk off.
It's a little more of an easier version of Forbidden Island.
Though the board is a lot longer than it is square.
Yeah.
To make up for that.
Sure. Yeah, it tells you in the instructions, instead of arranging in, like, whatever, is a 5x5 grid.
Yeah, it's like
It's like 3x8.
Yeah.
That's quite long, which is interesting. You know, you could end up with all the statue stuff on the end, the tip of the peninsula. Usually when that happens, I just pick it up and redo it again because it's not an island. It's a peninsula. And then I think that's about it. Was there any other games that we played that we didn't talk about?
I think that's it.
I think that's about covers it. Well, yep, that's all the games we've been playing. We've been having a lot of fun with them. We highly recommend each and every one that we mentioned on this episode.
Yeah.
Seek those games out, purchase them, play them, tell your friends. Really fun games.
roll around in a pile of their components.
Yes, you can mix their components together. Honestly, a lot of them have a lot of modular components.
Pour them into a vault and swim in them like Scrooge McDuck.
Yeah, yeah, do all that.
Yeah.
Have fun. That's yeah. really, that's the message that we bring to you
on this podcast. That's the point of Board Game Bros.
Day over day, week into week, all we want you to be left with is one message, and that is have fun.
Drink water.
Drive responsibly.
Stay smart.
And if you want to find more information about Board Game Bros, you can follow us on social media at BG Broscast on Twitter and Facebook.
As well as our website at www.bgbroscast.com.
No, bgbcast.com.
Oh, man.
At bgbcast.
I made the biggest mistake.
Our website is www.bgbcast.com. That's where we post all our new episodes. You can also find our episodes wherever you listen to podcasts, you know, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Stitcher, Spotify, wherever.
Yeah.
If you're also in the mood to listen to podcasts or go to websites, you can check out Entertain the Geeky. They have a website, www.entertainthegeeky, where they have their podcast episodes.
Entertainthegeeky.com.
Whatever. It's a .com, I guess.
That's the important part.
Yeah, you don't forget the .com. And they have their own podcast, Entertain the Geeky. They also have a podcast, Nerd News. Both of those podcasts, they just talk about everything geeky, everything nerdy, cartoons, comics, anime, movies, TV shows, whatever. And at that same website, you can also purchase our game, Merle's Truck Stop in Maine. It's a one-player, one-page, multiplayer role-playing game.
And actually, as of right now, I believe it is currently on sale for $3.
For $3, not $3.
Right. As of April 1st, and going forward until we launch our Kickstarter in May 1st.
Yes.
It will be free.
Yes, $0 from Merle's Truck Stop in Maine. Go there, pick it up. It's absolutely free. What do you have to lose except for a little bit of data from your data plan if you're still on one of those in 2018? It's a one-page role-playing game with a horror theme, perfect for the spring season.
Yep.
If in my opinion, and like Matthew just said, we have an update on the Kickstarter for our company and for our next game, and that will start May 1st. So we will have more information going forward, but definitely look out. May 1st is when we will launch our Kickstarter, which will kickstart our company, Entertain the Geeky Games, as well as publish our very first card game, which is Conniving Cooks.
Conniving Cooks, a bluffing and deduction card game for 2 to 6 players, in which each player is a server at a high-class restaurant, trying to serve the correct dishes to the correct guests, while also making sure their fellow servers mess up and do not serve the correct guests the correct dishes.
All right. Again, that was Conniving Cooks. Look for the Kickstarter May 1st. And thank you for listening to Good Stuff. Look out next Saturday when we talk about a new board game.
Yep.